History can be examined in a few ways. You can be an outsider attempting to learn what happened through a rather finite source of incomplete sources. As an alternative, you can be an insider who can discuss in great detail what took place in order to help others gain a full knowledge, as well as an appreciation of that point in history. My next guest with his new book does the latter, fortunately, relating to the resignation of Richard Nixon, which took place 40 years ago. Yeah, we're getting old, aren't we? His book is Nixon's Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth. There's a keyword underscore that and boldface that about the president, Watergate, and the pardon. He was also the youngest member of the Nixon administration, by the way. Roger Stone, good morning, Roger.
Great to be with you.
StoneZone.com on the web is Roger's place. We're going to learn more about Nixon's secrets and all of Roger's work. It's sad to say, but for when we talk about Watergate, like I made the aside in the intro about how you and I are getting old in all these years, but for someone who was just out of college, we're talking ancient history as far as education of history is concerned. Just give an overview of what was the significance of the Watergate break-in.
Well, it's kind of interesting given the context of what's happening in the country today. I mean, Nixon was on his way to the biggest reelection victory in American history, a 49-state blowout where he buried his opponent, George McGovern. Yet agents of Nixon broke into the Democratic National Committee months before the election, and even to this day we're not absolutely certain what they could possibly have been looking for. But that scandal and the fact that Nixon, rather than just firing everybody, that scandal ended up bringing Nixon down. It really seems incredibly venal, incredibly trivial compared to what's going on today. Look at it this way. Nixon wiretapped one building. He bugged one building. They ran him out of town. The current administration is wiretapping every American.
Yeah.
And nothing happens. Nixon talked about using the IRS to screw his political enemies. He talked about it. There was no evidence he ever successfully did it. This administration is using the IRS to harass its political enemies and then losing hundreds or thousands of emails detailing it. So it really does seem kind of minor now in retrospect, and it looks particularly minor in light of Nixon's enormous accomplishments. This is a man who ended the war in Vietnam, brought our troops home, opened the door to China, got a deep arms reduction agreement with the Soviets, ended the draft, got 18-year-olds the vote, started the Environmental Protection Agency, passed the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, desegregated the public schools. When Nixon became president, roughly 15% of the schools in the country were desegregated. By the time he left office, that was 80%. And he did it without violence or bloodshed or death of anyone. So he had enormous accomplishments, and very sadly, that all gets lost in the ashes of Watergate.
And it's kind of ironic, too, as you write and point out in so many ways in Nixon's Secrets, there's so much about Watergate that was propelled through diversion, the simple and the simplistic that overshadowed the devious and even the evil, which parallels all the diversions that Watergate casts upon Nixon's entire political career and the genius of it.
It really is sad because he resurrected himself not once, not twice, but three times. As Stephen Colbert said the other night on TV, even Jesus only pulled it off once. It is absolutely true that television both made and destroyed Richard Nixon. The first time in 1952 when he got caught up in the fund scandal and he took to television in the famous Checkers speech, saved his career. Then television cost him the 1960 election where he had a terrible debate with John F. Kennedy, the first of four debates. Now, what people don't know is Nixon bounced back in the last three debates. The fourth debate was considered his best. He really took Kennedy to the cleaners. And it had a television audience that was almost as large as the first debate. The dirty little secret is I believe the 1960 election was stolen from Richard Nixon. I go into great detail about how Lyndon Johnson stole votes in Texas and how Mayor Daley and the Daley machine, aided by organized crime and the mob, were supporting Kennedy and gave Kennedy $1 million, which is huge money in 1960, stole Illinois. Nixon came from behind to win that race. He was on the move at the end. He was closing fast. Kennedy was flatlining in the polls. He had already spent his wad. The spending was enormous. So Nixon got outspent enormously, and the election was still stolen from him. That's not what you'll read in Teddy White's book, The Making of the President, who has a romanticized version of the 1960 election in which John Kennedy is a shining knight and Dick Nixon is the guy with the black hat. But the real story of the 1960 election, the closest election in American history, is in my book.
Talking about Roger Stone, the book Nixon's Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth About the President, Watergate, and the Pardon. StoneZone.com on the web. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. And it's important to point out, too, on my part, that Nixon's Secrets, we're talking about, obviously, the Watergate anniversary, but Roger gives a full, factual presentation of the political career, the influences, the teachers, a lot of what Nixon is accused of, Roger, of being the instigator and the creator of. He was actually taught by others. He had his heroes, his inspirations, his guides.
There's no question. I spend a lot of time in the book talking about Murray Schottner. Murray Schottner was Nixon's original mentor, his first campaign manager, his lifelong political advisor. He was originally a mob lawyer out of L.A. He was kind of a fat, dumpy, cigar-chomping pal. He was also brilliant. We talk about the negative campaign. He invented the negative campaign. When Nixon got in trouble in 1952 as the vice presidential nominee, the allegation was that he had taken funds from a group of rich men and done favors for them. It was Murray Schottner who said, "Dick, don't talk to the newspapers. Let's get a half hour of time and go on television and tell you the story yourself." So Nixon was formed by these people. It's amazing because he could choose very, very good people. Daniel Patrick Moynihan, for example, later a U.S. senator from New York, but worked in the Nixon White House on welfare reform, on urban reform. Henry Kissinger. At the same time, he could choose some very, very bad people. John Dean, for example, whose latest book is a total fabrication, a complete fraud. He tells us he's giving us the definitive story of Watergate, yet he omits or truncates the Nixon-Dean conversations of March 13th, 17th, 20th, and 21st. If you listen to those, you find out who started the cover-up and who sucked Nixon in. Nixon didn't suck Dean in. Dean sucked Nixon in. And it was the cover-up that brought Nixon down, not the actual break-in.
And, you know, like it or not, Nixon understood he was the boss, he was the leader, and there was a mess to clean up, and he propelled things forward to clean up as you know, hindsight being whatever the value it is. His idea of cleaning it up was the wrong way to clean it up.
He didn't act decisively enough. He should have chopped off those responsible in the very beginning. The tapes would never have come to light, and he would have survived. If it had been his word against John Dean's word, he still would have survived. The tapes ultimately brought him down. He should have destroyed the tapes. Before they were subpoenaed, destruction of the tapes wouldn't have been a crime. They were his personal property. Instead, he kept the tapes based on bad legal advice or a desire to have a historical record of his foreign policy triumphs, and it was the tapes that brought him down. It is Watergate that obscures what was a very progressive and positive record for America.
You know, you compare then and now, sort of like the Nixon and the tapes, destroying them if he had the chance, sort of like the head of an IRS and certain emails disappearing.
Can you imagine what would happen if we learned under Nixon that CIA was spying on members of the U.S. Senate, tapping into their email? It would have brought Nixon down. Today we know that the CIA is spying on our elected representatives in the Senate, and nothing happens. So it really does show you, in retrospect, how venal and minor the crimes of Watergate were compared to what's happening today.
Yeah, about a minute left here with Roger Stone, Nixon's Secrets, StoneZone.com and the web. You write in great detail about someone who, like him or not, I've always found totally fascinating, Alexander Haig.
Yeah, I really think that Haig is the guy who brings Nixon down. Haig's loyalty is not to Nixon. Haig is a courtier. He's a butt kisser. He's a brown noser. And his loyalty is to the Pentagon. His loyalty is to a clique of hardliners who are opposed to withdrawal of our troops from Vietnam, who are opposed to the SALT agreement with the Soviets, who are certainly opposed to the Chinese initiative. Haig makes a series of really bad decisions as Nixon's chief of staff. He learns about the Watergate tapes, but he doesn't tell Nixon to destroy them before they're subpoenaed. He fails to tell Nixon on the Friday before the Monday that the tapes are going to be public in the Senate Watergate Committee hearings. He really disserves Nixon. And in the end, it is Haig that Nixon sends to fire Agnew or tell Agnew that he has to resign. It's Haig who goes to Jerry Ford and threatens him. Basically, if you'll see this in my book, Haig says to Ford, look, Nixon knows what you did in the Warren Commission. He knows that you altered the autopsy at J. Edgar Hoover's request to change the description of the wounds in John Kennedy's upper back to his lower neck to accommodate the single bullet theory. So in essence, Nixon says to Ford, if I'm going down, you're going down with me. And the guys at the CIA are going down with us. And that's why from August 1st, 1974, after Haig has a private meeting with Ford, of which there is no record, it's very clear that Ford has no choice but to pardon Nixon. He does. And it costs Nixon his reelection. It costs Ford his reelection.
The book is Nixon's Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth about the President, Watergate, and the Party. You get a lot more than what you see or what you're seeing in this 40th anniversary of Watergate. You're getting the stories, the reasons, the catalysts, the costs, and every point in between by one of the best who has been there, done that, and been inside for a lot of campaigns from Nixon even before through Reagan and even after. StoneZone.com on the web. Roger Stone, another fantastic job by providing us with the history and the truth. That's always a good tandem to have. Thanks for being here.
Chris, thanks for having me again.